Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Welcome to the Billboard Sharpie Podcast. Gary Trust, Billboard Senior Director of Charts.
And hey guys, it's Trevor Anderson, a chart manager here at Billboard.
Live from our Times Square offices here in New York. It's going to be even busier, I guess, here in Times Square. Just in the last couple weeks or so, news of a new three-floor McDonald's and a new Krispy Kreme coming to Times Square.
Okay, because here's my thing about the Krispy Kreme. Because there is one Krispy Kreme in Manhattan, as people know. It is located in Pennsylvania Station, 34th Street. And the funny thing about that is Krispy Kreme is notorious for their hot donuts. But you can't get a hot donut at the Krispy Kreme location in Penn Station. Like, they just, I guess, ship them in or whatever. Huh. Like, they can't make them on site, so you can't get a hot one. So maybe you can get a hot Krispy Kreme in Times Square soon? Because I'm telling you, I mean, I'm not even like that big on Krispy Kreme, but it's like, if you get those hot Krispy Kreme, baby, that's good.
I'm seeing it'll have stadium style seats and a glazed waterfall.
I hate capitalism. A glazed water. how much energy it's going to waste to make a glaze? Like, somebody's going to drown in that. Someone's going to try and just tilt their head back and just drink the waterfall. That waterfall going to be nasty. Why would you do that? Just give us the hots.
It's like a Willy Wonka come to life kind of a thing.
Maybe.
Really excited to have Howard Jones coming up on the podcast. Had all these great 80s hits. Brand new album out called Transform. I've been a fan of his music for over 30 years now. So he's coming in to talk about his biggest hits and his brand new music. So real positive lyrics that he's kind of always been known for, and just great pop hooks in the 80s and beyond. So no songs necessarily about McDonald's and Krispy Kreme, but...
Okay, well, that's coming up. But before we can talk about the past, let's talk about the present. Here's what's going down this week. The top 10 of the Billboard Hot 100.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Number 10.
Oh, she's sweet but a psycho, a little bit psycho.
Number 9.
Look what you made me do. I'm with somebody new. Ooh, baby, baby, I'm dancing with a stranger.
Look what you made me do. I'm with somebody new. Ooh, baby, baby, I'm dancing with a stranger.
Number 8.
Packing the mail, it's gone. She like I smell cologne. Yeah. I just signed a deal, I'm on. Yeah, yeah. I go where I want, good, good. Play if you want, it's do it. I'm a young CEO, sure. Yeah, yeah.
Number 7.
Ooh, then you're left in the dust. Unless I stuck by ya. You're a sunflower. I think your love would be too much.
Number 6.
It's a moment when I show up, God, I'm saying wow. 100 bands in my pocket, it's on me. Your grandma will probably know me. Get my bottles, these bottles are lonely. It's a moment when I show up, God, I'm saying wow.
number 5.
I'm a sucker for all the subliminal things no one knows about you. Sucker for you,
yeah. Number 4.
'Cause I don't care when I'm with my baby, yeah. All the bad things disappear. You're making me feel that maybe I am somebody. I can deal with the bad nights when I'm with my baby, yeah.
Number 3.
Can we just talk? Can we just talk about where we're going before we get lost?
Number 2.
I'm that bad type, make your mama sad type, make your girlfriend mad type, might seduce your dad type. I'm the bad guy.
Duh. And number 1.
Yeah, I'm gonna take my horse to the old town road. I'm gonna ride till I can't no more. I'm gonna take my horse to the old town road. I'm gonna till I can't no more.
I got the horses in the back.
Okay, and once again in first place, you know, that's called a win in horse terms. We got the one, the only song there's ever been on the Billboard Hot 100, Old Town Road, holding strong 10 weeks at number 1. You all know it, love it. We talked, I mean, of course, ad nauseum about this song, but this week we got a little something new to add to it, because 10 weeks is officially 2 digits when you write it down. So Old Town Road making its way into an elite group of songs that have had at least 10 weeks at number 1. This track is now the 38th to do so, going all the way back to 1958 when the Hot 100 started. So a really small group of songs. Obviously a lot of them have come, you know, in the very recent past, just as we've flipped over with some technology with Nielsen. But yeah, the longest we've had number 1 since Drake's In My Feelings last year, which also had 10 weeks at number 1, powered by the Shiggy Challenge. Soul Town Road joining that pack. And I guess as we hit that double digit mark, we got to turn our attention to if it can get to that all time record. 10 weeks down, only 6 to go, so more than halfway there. 16 weeks, the longest any song has spent at number 1 on the Billboard Hot 100. That record is held by 2 songs. First song to do that was a song called One Sweet Day, Mariah Carey and Boyz II Men in late 95, early 96. And a couple years ago, at long last, there was another song that made it all the way. That was Despacito, Luis Fonsi and Daddy Yankee featuring Justin Bieber back in the summer of 2017.
Yeah, the conversation, can it hit magic 16 weeks and tie or then break the record? A way to maybe dig into that and by the numbers, maybe see how much of a possibility that is to look at the lead currently that Old Town Road has over number 2 and see where Despacito was in its 10th week. So currently, Old Town Road has an almost 3-1 points lead over heard Billie Eilish at number 2 with Bad Guy, 2.8-1. So almost a 3-1 points lead. That's, I guess if it's Old Town Road, we should say how many lengths ahead of number 2.
You like that? Last week I brought that up. Gary seemed impressed by it.
So 3-1 points lead. Airplay is still gaining for Old Town Road. So it really doesn't seem like it's about to fall apart yet. If we look back at Despacito in its 10th week, and again, it had 6 weeks left of being number 1, it had an almost 2-1 points lead over, it was Wild Thoughts at the time, but never got to number 1. We don't know if Bad Guy will get to number 1. So 2-1 points lead in the 10th week for Despacito over number 2, 3-1 for Old Town Road. So if you're just going by those numbers, it would seem, yeah, it's got it. But again, anything can happen in any given week. And if it's not Bad Guy, that goes to number 1. I feel like we just got the news. We don't even know if it's officially news yet. But I feel like at this point, I'm banking on the, if it exists or not, the new Katy Perry, Taylor Swift single Together. I feel like that could have enough buzz to maybe be a number 1 debut if such a song even exists.
Yeah, I mean, that's the real question. And it feels like it's going to need to be, something's going to have to get a big jolt. It's going to have to be a brand new song from somebody. I mean, Katie Taylor will be an interesting choice because we've seen a lot of songs, pop songs, particularly in the past couple of weeks, get to number 2 You know, whether it's a huge jump or a debut. Taylor herself got to number two with Me. We'll actually talk about Katy Perry's new song in just a little bit. But I wonder if that's, I don't know, if that even at this point, I mean, I'm sure there'll be more interest around that song, of course, with the drama and, you know, yeah, the backstory about all of that. But I don't know, even some of these pop narratives that just haven't really been able to do it. And I don't know. I mean, at this point, people I know are like flipping down the little Guess Who board of who can do it with Ed not being able to and Shawn Mendes and Taylor. I know Rihanna and Adele are still sort of the big wild cards out there. But who really knows if they have anything planned? Maybe if Drake drops a song after the Raptors win this NBA Finals, maybe that.
Did you say when or if?
At this point. While, for the record, this is after game five, so we're talking 3-2. I'm going to say win. Huh? I'm going to go on a limb and say win. But it's just, I don't know. I mean, I don't know what else can do it. Bad Guy, of course, is still on its way up, but just doesn't seem like it's going up quickly enough to where it's going to hit these sort of stratospheric heights. And, you know, I mean, if Old Town Road does do it, how interesting that, you know, you have sort of a long established acts, Mariah and Boyz II Men, who were in the prime of their careers in the 90s at the time they did it. Justin Bieber really wrapping up what had been almost a 2-year sort of omnipresent pop dominance. And then you'll just have sort of this, you know, I mean, literally dark horse candidate that came out of nowhere, surged to the top of the chart and held it down for 4 or more months.
Dark horse, Katy Perry, Old Town Road, you just wrapped it all up.
I tried to pull a page out of the trust book. Hopefully the manual did me right.
Guess it's never really over. Just because it's over doesn't mean it's really over. And if I think it over, maybe you'll be coming over again. And I'll stick it up for you all over again. Just because it's over doesn't mean it's really over.
All right, so speaking of Katy Perry, she's also back on the Hot 100 this week with the new song Never Really Over, debuts at number 15. Solid start on streaming, pulling just under 16 million streams in its first week. Pop Radio in particular really getting behind this song. Second week on the Pop Songs Airplay chart, which measures top 40 activity, up to number 21. So just about breaking the top half of that chart. And, you know, Kemi Katie, for a lot of people, I think has been, you know, they weren't sure what to expect in terms of both the sound and in terms of the reception. Witness, of course, was not, you know, her best performing album, and the singles really didn't take off in any way that we'd come to expect Katy Perry projects to do in the 2010s. So I think a lot of people were wondering, kind of at the same time where we had question marks about Gaga and Justin Timberlake, if Katy Perry was, you know, sort of on her way out the door. Seems like the early reception of this song has been pretty strong. I mean, I think a lot of people really liking it. It's sort of a return to more of the mid-2010 sound that really made Katy Perry one of the biggest names in pop music and certainly one of the biggest forces on pop radio. So it seems like, you know, the Witness era and kind of the misstep there did not really do any long-term damage to Katy's career.
Press, 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 press. Cardi don't need more press. Kill them all, put them hoes to rest. Walk in bulletproof vest.
All right, to give a mention to two other songs that hit the Hot 100 this week after we had kind of what was the first big release week of the season, the Friday before last. We talked to Katy Perry at number 15. Right behind her at number 16 is Cardi B with the song Press. Third song that's been a standalone single since her album came out. Waiting on that next album. We had Money last year. We had Please Me this year with Bruno Mars. Now we got Press. Cardi, what is the project coming? But in the meantime, at least keeps her top 20 streak alive on the Hot 100 with this new track.
Yeah, we had John McMahon from Atlantic on the podcast a couple weeks ago. He couldn't get out of him. Couldn't find out that release date.
No, I mean, he had a little smile on his face. I know, obviously, the listeners couldn't see that, but it they kind of like to give a little nonverbal hints that something may or may not be on the way. Speaking of Cardi, somebody who recently, you know, there was a social media kind of row about the line in a Miley Cyrus song about that she loves Nicki, but she listens to Cardi. So Miley Cyrus also getting in on that release Friday back on the Hot 100 with the song Mother's Daughter. It's actually not the track with the Nicki Cardi line. That's Catitude, but Mother's Daughter, the one from her new EP, She Is Coming, which is the first of three EPs that are going to make a full album. So we got some more Miley music certainly coming along the way. But Mother's Daughter starts this week at number 54 on the Hot 100. So Dad out there at number one. Miley's kicking her campaign off to maybe, I mean, the way Old Town Road's holding on, maybe Miley can jump up the chart and finally be the one to knock out her dad.
Yeah. Did you see the Black Mirror episode with Miley?
No, I heard it's actually pretty good.
Yeah, I just saw it. I thought it was typical Black Mirror. It was really good and sort of terrifying at the same time. But for that show, actually more on the funny side.
It kind of mirrors like what her real life, you know,
yeah,
could or is or could be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I won't give any spoilers, but hopefully not too on the money, although it was a little more lighthearted than most Black Mirror episodes. But yeah, Miley, really good in that episode.
Walk me home in the day.
All right, a few things on some other Billboard charts this week before we get to Howard Jones, our special guest. Pink, number one on adult pop songs. It's her 10th number one on that Airplay chart, most among soloists. Only Maroon 5 has more with 13. So 10 number ones for Pink, all since 2007 with Walk Me Home. I was listening to that song, and I thought it does something really interesting, and it reminded me of another song. So you just heard a part of the song. Here's this part of the song, what it does later.
Walk me home in the dead of night, 'cause I can't be alone with all that's on my mind. Say you'll stay with me tonight, 'cause there is so much wrong going on. Walk me home in the dead of night.
So does this breakdown here. Pink sings the chorus, the hook, the same way, but it's this really quieter, more intimate version. It kind of goes acoustic for a second and a different register to her voice. And then it picks back up again. Really reminded me of what Maren Morris does in this song.
Why don't you just meet me in the middle? I'm losing my mind just a little. So why don't you just meet me in the middle?
So same thing with the middle.
Ah, the little breathy middle, yeah.
Yeah, so it's going at 100 miles an hour, and then it just sort of slows down, and it's sort of a new way to write a bridge, I guess. Or maybe I'm trying to think of other examples, but just it kind of is enough to – we could talk to our friends at HitSongs Deconstructed about this. It's just something that adds a little variety while still keeping the main elements of the song, but it's just enough to kind of step out for a second, and you pick it back up. Songwriting tip I just picked up on my own.
I was going to say, I wonder how the songwriters, maybe the producers like it. I wonder how the songwriters feel if the ones who are bridge purists. I wonder what their take on that would be.
On the Billboard 200, Thomas Rhett is number one, his second number one album with Center Point Road. Life Changers hit number one in 2017. Also, Elton John gets his 20th top 10 with his 2017 Best of Set Diamonds. So as the Rocketman movie is doing really well, people are going to the soundtrack for the new versions with Taron Egerton, but they want to hear the originals. That's a place where so many of his hits are in one place. So Diamonds, Elton John gets his 20th top 10 on the Billboard 200, and a new song from the Rocketman soundtrack is Elton and Taron Egerton together. I'm Gonna Love Me Again debuts number 30 on the AC chart. It's Elton John's 73rd adult contemporary chart hit. It's the most of all artists. So that record seems pretty safe for a while, and he keeps adding to it.
Yeah, because I wonder if Elton saw those big returns that Queen has gotten from Bohemian Rhapsody. The movie came out November 2nd, so just about over 6-7 months ago. But, I mean, just what it did to Queen's catalog just helped really reignite it in a way that it just kept giving and giving. And obviously, you know, extra buzz from winning the Academy Award and all those kind of things. But, I mean, you wonder if Rocketman, you know, will kind of do the same thing for Elton's catalog and just obviously Elton's not hurting for money or anything like that, but just to keep it, you know, I mean, really give it this huge boost, keep it in the top, you know, 25 of the Billboard 200 week after week. I mean, this could ride out for the rest of the year. It seems like the reviews, you know, are pretty favorable and people seem to be enjoying it. So
did you see Bohemian Rhapsody?
I did not.
Here's something I sort of surprised hasn't been mentioned. I was Googling this as we were talking about the movie. Queen bass player John Deacon in the movie is played by Joseph Mazzello. Do you know who that is? He was Tim in Jurassic Park.
Well, we're back in the car again.
Oh, at least you're out of the tree.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I need to just see the movie now just to see Tim
wow,
all grown
it's
up.
Tim!
He survived Jurassic Park, went on to be in the Queen movie. One other angle to mention on the charts this week. Last week on the podcast, we had John Miller and Scott Musgrave from Nielsen on. We're talking country music and got into a pretty deep discussion about the lack of women on country radio. What a difference 1 week makes. Trisha Yearwood, you just heard, she debuts number 21 with Every Girl in This Town. That's her highest debut ever on the chart. She previously had a high debut with Garth Brooks in 2006, but this, of all her 50 songs ever on the chart, this is her highest debuting. So Trisha at number 21, at number 33 on Country Airplay.
It wouldn't take much to prove you wrong.
Sheryl Crow, Stevie Nicks, and Maren Morris, they debut with Prove You Wrong, kind of a 70s country rock vibe to that song, but Sheryl Crow's highest debut ever as well on the chart, and Stevie Nicks, she actually had one song on a Billboard country chart back in 1982, it was a pop hit as well after the Glitter Fades, so now all these years later. Stevie Nicks back on Billboard's country charts.
Well, really cool that it's also, you know, three generations of these artists coming together. So a nice sort of, you know, every sort of fan can find their own entry point and really appreciate the other two.
So those two songs are new on the chart. One other in the top 20 this week. Runaway June, they move up with Buy Me One Drinks. And that's the first top 20 hit by an all-female group, not duo, because Maddie and Tay have been in top 20. They've been number one a few years ago. But first top 20 hit for a female group of at least three members since 2005, since Shadazy had a hit in 2005. So only 14 years between all-female groups getting a top 20 hit on the country chart. So
Pistol Annies didn't do it or anything?
No.
Like, wow.
Yeah.
Okay, huh.
So for all we've been talking about women, lack of women on the country charts, there's some good...
some signs of life
out
there.
Sort of interesting that Trisha Yearwood, Sheryl Crow, Stevie Nicks, artists who have been around for a while at this point, maybe it doesn't solve the where are the brand new artists, but I guess any step forward is positive at this point. All right. So that's this week's... Big Chart Moves. Really excited to have our guest on the podcast this week. I've been a fan, again, of his music since the late 80s. Nine top 40 hits on the Hot 100, including the top 10s. Things Can Only Get Better, 1985. No One Is to Blame, which was co-produced by Phil Collins back in 1986. Five albums on the Billboard 200, including the top 10, Dream Into Action, in 1985. He's continued to chart in recent years, had some hits on the dance charts, which really makes sense for his synth sound that he was always known for in the 80s. So new album just came out, Transform. He's touring as well. Really excited to have Howard Jones on the Billboard Chart Beat podcast. Trevor, you were actually, I think, en route from stuck in a in an airport somewhere when this interview happened. So it's just me doing this one. But I had plenty of questions for Howard Jones. So really excited to have him on. And we're sort of joking before we interviewed. We're setting up levels. We're saying, what level are you going to be speaking at? And he just said some words. And then he said, unless I start yelling or screaming. So I was really worried the whole rest of the interview if Howard Jones was going to scream at me. I'll end the suspense. Didn't happen. He was very nice.
Aw, we wanted a scream.
So Howard Jones coming up as our very special guest on the Billboard Chart podcast.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
One of my favorite artists, really, of all time, Howard Jones. Welcome to the Billboard Chart Podcast.
Well, thank you so much. And I'm very honored to be here.
Thank you. You're a legend on Billboard Charts. So really want to talk about your whole career, some of your biggest hits, the new album, Transform. But I guess since we're saying this is, we were just saying beforehand, this is the first time you've ever been up. You've ever been allowed
to yes. set at Billboard.
Have you followed your songs over the years on the charts?
I must admit, in the early days, you know, I used to do that, and but of course, I couldn't really avoid it because people are always telling me, you know, like record company people telling you what, you know, where the record is, and it was very exciting, and I think it did mean a lot, you know, and in those early days of my career.
In 2013, you still had a top 10 with a new version of "Things Can Only Get Better." So we're talking decades on the charts.
Yeah, the version I did with Cedric Gervais. Yeah,
right.
Yeah, that was great. Actually, I think he did a great job on that. And we actually took that on board to play that live. So we did after the you know traditional version of Things Can Only Get Better. We went into the EDM Cedric, and people used to go crazy for it. So. Yeah, it was worked really well.
It was playing on the car. I think maybe 2 days ago when I got out of the car to get on the train coming in here. It's on the AC station up in Hudson Valley, New York. It's like there's Howard Jones.
That's the thing about you know you put record out and you just never know what's going to happen to it. Yeah. It's like obviously it's a huge thrill that you know I'm still being played on the radio. It's really great. I'm always very interested to hear how it sounds. On the radio compared to the other records around it to make sure that it's like, you know, punching through and, you know, makes its mark.
You can't just listen and enjoy it. You have to put your producers.
Yeah, exactly. I just can't do that. I have to analyze everything.
Yeah. And with being on adult radio specifically, you're up against decades of music. So to be on that format with newer songs, it has to be as good as everything from the Beatles to Adele. Mm. That's certainly a sign that your catalog stands up.
Yeah, I'm very very. Sort of makes me feel really good, actually, that because I suppose you know when I started out, the radio was what I was aiming for. A lot of bands around my era, it was like they didn't really want to be on the radio because they sort of felt it was uncool. But for me, it was like that's the holy grail, is to be on the radio because that's what I grew up with. And you know, if you're on the radio, you can be heard in people's cars and when they're doing the washing up and you know, like you know, when they're doing you know in the garden. you know, it's like it's sort of a universal thing. So that was always my thing. I wanted to be on the radio. So fortunately, radio did like it, and they still keep playing it, which is great.
You said that you never got great reviews, or at least maybe the reviews you wanted, but you were okay with that.
Yeah, that's right. I was never sort of a darling of the press ever. You know, I mean, normally people have like one short honeymoon period where but not for me. But you know, when I look back on that now, I actually feel grateful about that because it sort of it stiffened my spine in a way and made me more determined than ever to, you know, really pursue what I really wanted to do. And so I mean, in height at the time, I didn't quite feel like that. It was hurtful. But as time has gone by, I can see that actually was really good for me because I'm still here now fighting and, you know, making new music that I really care about.
Yeah. Part of the reason I like your music so much is you write such great melodies. It's based on just great pop hooks. And to me, that's what makes a great pop song, that not everyone can write that way. And yeah, I feel like critics sometimes think it's they like something that's more dark. Esoteric. Yeah, just kind of eccentric. The pop hooks don't always get the critical love for whatever reason.
No, I mean, you know, it takes a few decades or so before it's appreciated. I mean, it's an interesting thing because it's almost like it's not just the sort of pop hooks of it was the optimism of my music, I think, that really got on critics' nerves. You know, they didn't like that. I mean, rather be celebrating sort of something that was darker and more depressed, which I sort of understand in a way, in the sense that, you know, people who are constantly living their lives being told what to do in their job and stuff like that, there's few chances to rebel. And when you rebel, you want to rebel in a sort of like dark way. It's a shame that people can't rebel in a positive way. You know, like I've always thought that, but, you know, anyway, hey, that's the way the world is. So we have to work with that.
So positive rebel.
Yeah.
Howard Johnson.
Yeah. I mean, it didn't put me off. I mean, it didn't stop sticking to what I believed was the right thing to do, you know.
Where did that optimism?
You know, it comes, I believe, from an understanding of cynicism within myself. I see it very clearly. And, you know, that negative force that tries to stop you doing what you'd really like to do in life, or, you know, taking away your confidence, all that stuff. And I feel like I understand that very well. And so with the music, I write, so I'm going to write music that helps to be an antidote to that. So when the difficult things occur in life, like it does to every single person, you know, music should be there to help you get through the next day, the next couple of days, through to the other side, and then you're off and running again, you know. And art should be that inspirational, encouraging thing. And there's many ways of art doing that, but for me, it's about a positive message in the music.
Yes. When people think of you, they think of songs that make them feel good. That's a pretty good thing to put out into the world.
Yeah. I hope so. I mean, that's my role in it all. And I'm sticking to it. I'm just trying to get better at it, you know, trying to refine it so that, you know, I get to the point more interestingly. Yeah.
Even after all these hits, all these years of writing great stuff, you still feel that drive that I have to outdo myself?
Yeah, I mean, I certainly did with this album. And actually, you know, I really admire sort of heritage artists still putting out new work, because it's not like the old days where you kind of knew that it would get, you know, a reception and it would get probably played on the radio or to some degree, or, you know, it would sell. But now there's no guarantee of that whatsoever. So it's really you're doing it purely for very, I don't know, good reasons, really. It's because, like, if you're an artist, you've got to be making new work. I mean, otherwise, what are you? It's kind of a museum piece, you know, musical museum, which I don't want to become. I want to be always like trying things new, doing new things and moving forward. And the moment you lose that, and then maybe that's time to sort of reconsider and do something else.
Yeah. just talking about this optimism that you have, and I think people tend to look at artists who came out somewhere in the mid-80s as the synthesizer transformation was going on in music, and maybe this is where some of the critics came in at that point too, where it's maybe the thinking is it was studio produced. It doesn't have a soul to it. It doesn't have a heart. But I've always felt that your music does have such a humanity, such an optimism to it, that maybe people hear some of the production. But to me, you're a singer songwriter who could have been successful really in any era of the rock era. Yeah.
Well, well, thank you very much for saying that. I mean, I do, I kind of agree, really. I mean, one of my things was I want to be using the technology of my day, which is like, you know, you think back to the times of, you know, Mozart and Beethoven, when piano technology was developing. You know, there was the harpsichord, which you could not get any kind of, inflection of, you know, you press the key and it's one sound. And then the piano comes along where you can get loud bits and soft bits. So already you've got more expression. And, you know, if you're Beethoven or Mozart, what are you going to do? Stick with the harpsichord? No way. you're going to want to use the new exciting technology of the day. And in a sense, you could say that technology has driven music forward constantly through time. I mean, there was the acoustic guitar, then there was the electric guitar. That's a development in technology. And so really, it's a bit short-sighted to sort of go, oh, you know, the only way to do it is the way we've all always done it. No. Surely, for the whole of society, that's not a good thing. Take the good stuff from the past, obviously, and learn from that,
yeah.
but be moving forward. Human beings love doing that. It's natural for us to do that.
Yeah, how exciting was that time in the early mid 80s when coming off the 70s, it was a lot of acoustic singer-songwriter. There was a lot of rock. There was disco. Mm. And then the 80s, just the synth, the new wave era took over.
Well, I think it was a really fun time, really, because, you know, not only that, you had video as well. So suddenly you could express yourself visually as well. So we had that. And I think, you know, fashion played a part of it. I think there was a desire to have a break from what had gone on in the 70s and, embrace the new technology. But of course, I don't hear it said very often that if you're starting your career in the 80s, the early 80s, your influences would have been from the decade before.
Right.
So it's not like suddenly it comes from nowhere. It's like nobody does that. Nobody arrives from another planet with a new sound. There's a line of interesting bands. You know, I think, you know, Roxy Music were very important. Bowie, obviously, very important. And then bands like Japan, certainly for the, and then Kraftwerk, you know, coming from Europe, led to the, to the synth side of what the 80s was. And as you said, there's many other facets to it. But the electronic music side, you could sort of see a line come from the 70s.
Was it for you, though, still at its root about, I still have to have a well-crafted song underneath all this?
Yeah, I think at that time, certainly it was really important. And that's what I loved to do. It was my real absolute joy to write songs that had verses, choruses, middle eights, hook sections, you know, intros, outros. I just love working with the pop song form, which is a beautiful form, but then to give it some extra twists and changes that were unique to you. I remember speaking with Phil Collins, and he said to me, what I really like about your songs is that you don't necessarily do the expected thing. There's always a little surprise in there. You know, you go to something, to a place where, and so I was dead chuffed when he said that.
You've said Paul McCartney is a singer and songwriter you think you're similar to, and not necessarily comparing yourself to him, no. But in terms of pop hooks and optimism, yeah. I suppose, in some ways.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I feel I've always felt that. His melodic sense and the influences in his music, in a bit of classical, a bit of jazz, a bit of rock and roll, and all those things that, you know, part of my DNA as well. It's crazy to compare yourself to somebody else, but I mean, I mean, we're all human, aren't we? And, you know, it's not good to put people on a pedestal, and it's not good to look down on people. So really at the end of the day, we are, you know, we're all human beings doing our thing. I always felt, people have said to me as well, you know, that they thought I sounded like him sometimes in some of my vocal things. But I mean, I never got that, but people have said that. But, you know, just such an amazing person who understands what hooky melodies are, and that beautiful progressions that just make you feel amazing, you know, just musically, you know, take away the lyrics and still the music is just exquisite. Yeah,
you've toured with Ringo Starr. So yeah, you've got your own Beatles connection.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah, it was great. I toured with Ringo. He invited me to be part of the All Stars for a summer, and that was brilliant. I wouldn't be in anyone else's band, obviously, but Ringo, yeah. And yeah, we had a great time. My favorite thing was actually in the sound checks. You know, where we were just jamming and just listening to his groove. You know, I've always loved his playing and always said, like, he is like one of the ultimately best drummers ever. And I can never understand why that wasn't the consensus with everyone, because he just is, and influenced everybody who was any good. And he's got a certain place where he sits on the beat that is just so Ringo. I mean, it's just fabulous to listen to. And when you hear it, you know, on the stage live and you're jamming with it, you know, it's a good thing.
And from Ringo to Phil Collins, you've worked with some decent drummers.
Yeah, over the years. That's right. Yeah, I like good drummers. Yeah.
When did you first either realize or think, I can write songs, this is what I want to do? I know you were working at a factory before you became a full-time musician, but where did it even begin, even before that for you?
I was in my first band when I was 14, and I wrote all the music for it. I never was in a covers band. I just always wrote, you know, original music, and it started off, you know, when I was very young, being very prog, 20-minute pieces, very complicated, sort of almost impossible for anybody else to play. But I managed to get a group of people around me who were prepared to learn it. Another guy at school wrote poetry, and I just set this poetry to, you know, to music. And then I thought, well, actually, a lot of my favorite music isn't these long 20-minute pieces. It's pop songs in their beautiful jewel-like quality. So I started doing that and, you know, taking it out, mixing it up with the synths, and that started to work, and I, you know, got signed and took off from there.
Do you remember writing new song?
I remember coming up with this idea for it, in my front room in High Wycombe in Green Street, and had all the synths set up there. It was my live rig. And I think I had a gig the next night, and I just couldn't wait to play it to the fans. So I thought, I think they're going to really like this. And that was the great thing. It was like I was writing it, then playing it immediately. And I could get that feedback, and that's what happened. I played it, and I thought I was so excited. And they went nuts the first time that they heard it. And so I think this could this has got legs, this could do something. You sort of know, you have a feeling that
some artists don't. Work. Some artists have no idea when they've written maybe their biggest hit.
Yeah.
You can tell.
Yeah, well, I mean, I did get just such extraordinary feedback, I suppose, you know, from playing it live and that connection. I say to people, you know, to young bands, you know, try and make that connection, write the song, then go and play it straight away to an audience. And you'll know, you know, whether it and what bits need changing and what needs modifying, and then come back, fix it, then go out again. It's a great, it's the best way.
But you write most of your stuff over the years now, the new album, mostly by yourself. And we've looked into this at Billboard, how a lot of songs now have 5, 10, sometimes 15 writers on a song. Oh, yeah. What's your take on writing solo versus collaborating?
Well, I'm from the school of thinking that an artist has a unique vision on something. And that's what I think audiences really, really like. They don't want you to be like anyone else. They don't want you to fit in with any grid of genres and stuff. They want you to be who you really are fully. And I think that's the role of the artist to do that, is obviously take your influences when you're young, but strive to find what's unique about you. And then just hone that and then work on that. And so that doesn't really fit with 15 producers and 15 writers and so on. Then how can it be? Then it becomes like writing by committee.
Right.
So what is, and what's that committee dedicated to? It's dedicated to fitting in somewhere. Well, all the great artists, in my view, from the past, have never done that. They've never wanted to, and they've strived to do the opposite of that. And so we just have to remember that, you know, celebrate uniqueness, celebrate that odd, quirky voice, celebrate that odd way of putting songs together, celebrate that, not trying to homogenize everything, you know, that,
yeah,
that's just like terrible.
No song probably said that optimism for you and your catalog better than, it's right there in the title, Things Can Only Get Better. Mm-hmm. What are your memories of writing that song and putting it out and having that being embraced by the world?
Yeah. Well, it was written on the road because I had no songs. You know, I'd done the first album, nothing left. All the songs had gone in there. I had to write on the road. So I was had a little studio on with me, set up in every dressing room, would record bits on this little 12-track recorder, put it on cassette, play it to the band on the bus and say, oh, what do you think of this? And they go, yeah, this sounds great. And so there was a lot of energy around that time because the tour lasted 18 months. We were just like endlessly touring. And when I got back, you know, I had to record the album, but I had the songs because I, you know, I had worked on the road. I've never been able to do it since, but I had to, you know.
Yeah.
I didn't want to lose this opportunity that I'd created and I'd waited for my whole life. So, and, you know, it's very much about, you know, being on the road, there's a lot of energy about, and you see what people respond to and what they want. And they want to sing along with you and they want to feel that, you know, yeah, you know, even if we get it terribly wrong and we throw all the good stuff we ever did away and we're on our knees trying to move forward, at least we know that things can only get better, you know, and have, we can still have a hopeful view of the future, and that will drive us forward, you know. And I'm really proud of that song because I sing it to myself still.
On that song, is that a song that people often say, that's my favorite Howard Jones song?
Yeah, yes, it is. It's an interesting song because it's open to many interpretations. I mean, one of the main ones is, it's about, you know, fidelity and about that, you know, if you commit to somebody, you can't be messing about with other people because there will be a price to pay. And it's not that it's wrong or anything. It's just that there will be a price to pay. And that's what the song is saying. But then the broader aspect of it for me is like, is nobody going to take responsibility for anything? You know, who, you know, no one is to blame. Like, what do you mean? You know, surely the buck stops with, you know, with us. We have to take responsibility for what's going on and claim it, you know. So that's an important thing. It's also about frustration, about wanting things that you can't have. And is it possible? You can't have everything you always want. There's a, you know, yeah, I mean, it just throws up all these questions. The more I think about it, the more interpretations there are.
It kind of had a question mark. No one is to blame?
Yeah, exactly.
That I first, because I was 15, 1989, really getting into music around 88, 89. So I think the first song that really introduced me to your music was Everlasting Love. And I remember just hearing that intro and thinking that kind of sounds, that keyboard intro sounds a little different from other stuff that's out at the time. And I always loved the verses to that song, obviously the chorus, but 30 years, it's actually 30 years ago this week, it hit number one on Billboard's Adult Contemporary chart. But what a classic, so many years later still.
Oh great. Well, yeah, I mean, it was quite a difficult song to record. I mean, it's a very simple, you know, it's really basically three or four chords, the whole thing. And of course, that sounds very simple, but they're the hardest to write. I mean, you know, we were talking about McCartney before. You know, he can work miracles with just two or three chords. And that's a gift to be able to do that.
Right.
But when I tried to record it with one producer and it just didn't work. It just didn't sound right. And I didn't connect with him. And then I'd always wanted to work with Chris Hughes because he'd done all the Tears for Fears stuff, which I just loved so much, the production. And Ian Stanley, who was in Tears for Fears, the keyboard player, and Ross Cullum, who worked. So I got this team. I got like the A team working with me on two tracks, Everlasting Love and The Prisoner. And it was an education for me because they were so meticulous about everything. It just took forever to do just one sound. They would be, oh no, this can be a bit better, this can be a bit better, like all the guitars on it, the singing, I had to sing for days, you know. But you know, it was really worth it. And it was like, for me, it was learning about that forensic way of making records where you just, every detail has to be perfect. And then Rupert and Steve, who I'd worked with, were not that. It was more about capturing the vibe of the moment. And I've ended up somewhere in the middle. You know, that's how I make records now. Somewhere, capture the vibe, but also be meticulous at the same time.
Right.
So it was just great. And I'm so, interestingly enough, they weren't around for the mix. So we did the mix at my studio because they were going on to work with Paul McCartney.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they weren't going to give that up, were they?
You could forgive them for that.
Just for a measly Hojo mix.
Yeah, there is sort of, is this just me or sort of a reggae feel to that song? A little bit. Yeah, that was always a little different.
Yes, it is, but it's not like completely reggae, is it? It's sort of, we tried it more reggae and it just didn't work. So it's sort of like pop reggae, isn't it?
So, new album, Transform. Did it just feel like it was time for a new album? You're always creating.
Yeah, you know, I was asked to do the two tracks for the Eddie the Eagle film, so that got me started because it takes place in the 80s, the film, so it had to have that feel, but be a contemporary song. So, two songs came out of that very quickly. So I thought, maybe it could be the basis of an album. And continued with that thinking. And then in the meantime, I'd met BT, and we, you know, met up and said, look, we really must make some tracks together and not just talk about it, but actually do it, see it through and finish it. And so those three were going on at the same time as I was working on other stuff for the album and working with Robbie Bronerman. And so, yeah, gradually came together. And, it sort of was really fun doing it. I mean, it's always hard getting work past the line, you know, finishing it and being like completely satisfied with it. That's always the hard bit. But we got there in the end. You know, it takes me a while, but I got there.
Sound of it feels the sort of spiritual connection to something like Things Can Only Get Better. Mm. Beating Mr. Neg, you're still preaching that positivity.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, finding different ways to say those things, and I think a lot of people have related that song to, you know, mental illness and depression. I mean, but it's, you know, at the end of the day, it is, they're all connected to that. That voice, you know, that's telling you, wants to rob you of all your confidence and, you know, and tells you you can't do this and you can't do that. And I believe that everyone has that. And so the more that it's put out there that this is a common thing, the better people are going to feel and know that, well, we all do this. So how do we get around it? You know, we've got to sort of, on a daily basis, we have to win against Mr. Neg or Miss Neg.
Get as political as you want, but with discourse in the world nowadays, do you feel that type of thinking is both more needed than ever, and maybe people have kind of forgotten that on some level?
No, I'm one of those people who thinks there's more awareness of those things than ever, and especially when I speak with young people, they're much more open about how they, you know, the inner workings of their head. I think I feel very encouraged by that, and they sort of understand more and they're more willing to talk about it. I mean, talking about it is half the thing, isn't it? So I do think I'm hopeful things are moving in the right direction, and it just needs everyone to get on board, you know, and realize that, you know, we have to work together to solve the problems that we have, and we need to do it now.
Great, a new song on the album, Hero in Your Eyes. That's what I was saying before, just new songs on the album that totally fit in with some of your best work over the years. Mm. Great melody. It's really sweet lyrics.
I mean, Hero is the most sort of 80s-ish reference, I think. What's interesting about that song, when I play it on the piano, it works absolutely beautifully. So, you know, it wasn't written at the piano, but when you try take it back to its basic song, it just, all the bits work. It just really works beautifully. I hope people, you know, enjoy that one.
And song Mother on the album.
Yeah, well, you know, obviously wrote that for my mother. She's passed now 4 years ago. And I'd needed time to assess that before I did. I knew I was going to write a song because it was important. So when I came to write it, I was thinking, I'm not just writing it about my mum. I'm writing it on behalf of everyone who might hear this and how they feel about their mum, their mother. And so it felt like a big moment. I wanted the lyrics to be as direct as possible. No obscurity at all. I was like, right to the raw core feelings that you have, you know, and I wanted to express that. And it was very painful to write because I was having all these memories of my mother and how wonderful she was, and she's not here now, you know. And so it was like, oh, blimey, it was trauma, really. But when it was done, I just felt, oh, you know, I'm sure a lot of people will benefit from this because it's what they may want to say. Maybe they haven't had the time that I have as a songwriter to sit down and articulate it and express it. But that's my job, you know, that's what art is supposed to do. So I felt very, you know, when it was finally done, I thought, I just can't play it live, though. I mean, honestly, it's just too, it's too raw. I don't think I'll ever be able to do it, because I won't be able to get past the first line. You know, for people as well who may not have had the perfect relationship with their mother, it still applies, you know. You can still feel that, even though it may have been a difficult relationship, you can still feel that I wanted that song to relate regardless, you know. Yeah.
Oh, the heck with those critics. You've been doing this positive music for a long time now. It's been working. People love it.
Yeah.
It's we need more Howard Jones type of thinking in pop music.
Well, you know, I mean, that's certainly... I'm happy with that role, you know, and that's what I set out to do, and I'm still doing it and learning in the process.
Howard Jones, thank you so much for coming on the Billboard Therapy Podcast.
Well, thank you very much for having me. I really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.